All right. Are we ready? Lisa's here, our councillor. Morning, Lisa.
Morena.
So, Lisa was not at the Raglan Community Board meeting, so we're going to focus a little bit on the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee, which Lisa is the chair of, one of the council committees. But also, there are some local things to talk about. And the wharf, you went to the open. Did you go? Have I talked to you since?
We have.
Since then? Or would you dash off to it? How long ago was it?
Oh, no, I dashed off to it. That's right.
So it was
right.
2 weeks ago?
It was 2 weeks ago. It was fantastic. We had a really great turnout in terms of the people who were involved and people down at the wharf as well. We were able to unveil Simon Te Whero's Pa Kahawai, which is absolutely beautiful. And it was really neat to see a community member post on the notice board yesterday that they loved the work that was down there, particularly Simon's Pa Kahawai. So it's nice to get positive feedback with regard to the wharf project. And remember, folks, that was actually funded by the Provincial Growth Fund initially, which is a central government fund. And then we were fortunate to be successful to get the second lot of money through the Better Off Fund, which again was through central government. And only a portion, a very, very small portion of funds came from our harbour board lease money that was brought forward that was already anticipated and earmarked for work under the structure of the wharf itself. So that was brought forward. So it is a great collaboration between council, government agencies, Hapu and the community board and other key stakeholders that were involved in that project. So well done to everyone. So it looks beautiful down there.
Can I just mention too, Simon Te Whero, the news came through this week that has been selected to do some sculpture at a place in Norway where they do every 2 years. They invite 9 sculptors from all around the world.
And he was successfully
chosen as one of those. He was one of
120
people applied or were put forward. I don't know how that process worked, but yeah, he was one of the 9. And I had a look at their list of people. Most of the sculptors that they've had have always, most of them are from Europe, sometimes from Japan or Canada, a lot from Japan actually. So, and New Zealand is part of that Western world, but he has taps into a different cultural background as well. So they might get something different from him that they haven't seen before.
Oh, yeah, and it's so wonderful. So congratulations to Simon and to his family, you know, for the amazing work that he produces. And, yeah, kudos to Whaingaroa going to Europe and representing, and from that Matauranga Māori perspective that Simon will bring in his amazing work that he does, and he's so fabulous to work with, you know, working on that project and others, because if you remember, we also did the placemaking and we were lucky to get Simon to do the beautiful mural that's outside the library.
Was that from back then?
It was from back then, that's right, when a community member generously donated some funds and we put it towards that piece of work from Simon. So he's a joy to work with. And just to mention, we will be having an Indigenous Matariki Film Festival for Matariki going for a week, and we're really excited that part of that will be a collab Indigenous exhibition, which will include work from Simon and others. So we're really lucky in this community to have such a depth of creativity. Mm. So I'll just do a little plug, but we'll be able to release more of that information when we finalise the details on who will be involved in that exhibition and also the films that will be there and the people who will be speaking.
Mm. Now, the still with local issues, the big news from the community board meeting was that the someone has come up with some proposals for the breakwall at Manu Bay after a long period and a lot of pressure to get things done. Have you seen the concept for that, or concepts? I think there are about 5, I'm told.
I have got the report. I haven't read it actually, because I've been really focusing on the enhanced annual plan hearings that we've
had. Okay, well, I'm going to talk about them next. So
that's been my focus over the last couple of weeks, actually.
All right, but it's nice to see something happen there after so long.
I know, it has been. Well, I remember the first tweet that Bob McLeod and I had in my very first, with the sports fishing club here in Raglan, in my first 6 months as being councillor, which, you know, I've been in this role now for 7.5 years. So, you know, the passionate fisher people were all, you know, were engaging very early on, and so it's been a long journey, you know, at least 8 years.
Yeah, yeah, at least. Because I know this. Yeah, it started when Clint was the councillor before
exactly
you.
Right.
So yeah.
It could be a decade, actually, eight to ten years.
I guessed eight, but I might be wrong. Yeah, it might be longer.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's some progress there. Now, actually, let's go to the annual plan, because I know that at one point staff were putting aside $2 million for that. That was in the draft annual plan. And then I might even have been looking at that before you guys had to change from a long-term plan.
From the long-term plan to the annual plan.
So it probably didn't turn up in this one, did it?
Yeah, because for obvious reasons, because we are considering a 13.75 rates increase, and that we've had hearings this week, and we've had people from all over the district coming in, and overwhelmingly, which will be of no surprise to anyone listening, people were very distressed about the quantum of the rates increase and the impact that it'll have on their ability to pay their bills, actually. So, you know, we heard that loud and clear from those who came in, but also from those who did their written submissions. So I'd like to, you know, really say to the community that we do listen. And so we will be in our deliberations in early June, and that we do listen. And we had some really heartfelt people come in to speak to a number of issues that included stormwater, affordability, mortgages, roading, footpaths. So we heard from a spectrum of submitters in our hearings.
And presumably you also hear from people saying, oh, you need to do this in our community, you need to build this or fix this or do that or more of this. So I presume there's equally pressure to
actually
spend.
People were saying focus on the basics. Get that done well. And I think also there's that expectation that people expect gold standard, but really we can only afford a bronze or a gravel one. You know, so there's those expectations. But people were saying, there are some who the rates increase isn't a problem for them. So, you know, we want more. But overwhelmingly what people were saying to us is just do the basics. Some people, like from Porkenor, were saying we don't want $6 million spent on a library, even though it was in the long-term plan. You know, can you defer that? So people were actually asking, what can you put off? Do we actually need what's anticipated? And so, you know, those are the instructions to staff to go and look at more of what we going back to those basics so we can soften that rates increase. But then obviously the next step will be going into the discussions around the long-term plan. So once we've finished this annual plan, then we'll be going immediately into discussions of what is in our long-term plan for our communities, and is it what we need? What can we defer, or what can we take out? So those are really big discussions. So just want to assure people that we are listening.
Mm. Do you know what? Will you have to cut things from spending,
and
council
those,
spending?
And those will be part of the deliberation discussions that we'll have, which are on, they'll be taking place from the 4th to the 6th of June. So we will be, looking at what we can defer, what we can change. And also compounded with the rates increase is that our valuations have been
Delayed again,
and through we can't control that. We don't control that, so that will have an impact on rates as well.
So, wasn't it the people doing the valuations? Was it the Auditor General looked at it and said, "No, you need to go back and do something again"?
Yeah,
that's what I read somewhere.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
It is out of council's hands.
It's out of our hands.
But would you have had that info in time to set the rates anyway for 1st of July?
We were hoping to, but we, you know, that's all up in the air now. So that's a really tricky one.
So you would have to go based on the old valuation, which is maybe 3 years old, for the next set of rates. Okay, and then in a year's time, it'll be different. you should have the valuations within another year.
Yes, and you know we are hoping to have them for the rate strike in July, but we will need to wait for those valuations to come through.
Yeah, okay. What else? Yes, in the sort of national area, our council, Waikato District, has come out with a statement against the council's plans for Māori wards at council level. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
That's right. So we had a council hui last week where we discussed, amongst other things, our position on Māori wards, and it was unanimous that we do not want to disestablish the Māori wards, and we are strongly opposed to the proposed bill that is yet to come out from central government, and that we strongly support our position and our decision to keep our Māori wards because we see such value in them. In terms of that diversity around the decision-making table, that our relationships with all of our hapu across our district, it enriches our decision-making. There's a whole raft of really great things that we know that our Māori wards actually give us in council and to our communities as well. So we've gone out very strongly to oppose the coalition government's proposed bill on Māori wards. And I think what we're seeing across the country are those councils who did in 2022 establish Māori wards for this triennium coming out really strongly to say that they are in opposition to the coalition government's proposal for the bill. And I attended a really neat hui on Wednesday actually at O Mairopa and Whatawhata where Nanaia Mahuta presented and gave context to, their repealing of the provision of the poll for opposition. You know, if people didn't agree with a council position on establishing Māori wards, that they could go take it to a poll and it would only take 5% of those in that electorate to actually overturn a decision of council to establish Māori boards. So they took that out in 2021, that provision, which enabled councils like Waikato District Council to establish those boards. So I'm really proud of our council that it was unanimous and that we have kept, really strong and firm on that. So we await the proposed bill coming out, and that's scheduled for the end of this month.
It does feel like the government's a bit of a runaway train on a lot of these issues.
Well, given that it will come out, we anticipate the proposed bill to come out at the end of this month, which is May. It goes out for submissions in June, and they want to bring it in July. So it's under absolute urgency. And is this really an urgent matter?
Well, it's only urgent in the sense that they're trying to stop opposition from forming. I'm sure that's the tactic. Like everything, all at once, very fast.
It is,
And it's hard for people to gather for protest and opposition to gather steam.
Yeah, so the important part will be people to do submissions, just like with the fast track bill coming through so quickly that we will need people who believe in democracy and equity and diversity to really get on board and put in submissions once this bill comes out. Because there isn't in the proposed bill as we've seen it, it's to rescind the decisions made to establish Māori wards. It's to disestablish Māori wards.
Is the bill directly to disestablish Māori wards?
Yes.
So they wouldn't
need the proposed bill of what we've seen from the DIA. So the council can make the decision to rescind a decision to disestablish the Māori wards, or if, for example, Waikato District Council, we maintain our Māori wards, it can go to a binding poll in 2025, and then the wards would be disestablished in 2028. if it goes to a binding poll, and that poll says to disestablish that. So, and there's no provision in the proposed bill that we've seen to keep the status quo.
Well, there wouldn't be, would there?
Pardon?
There wouldn't be a provision for that.
But there should be.
The bill. Should there? Is that what they normally would do?
Well, I don't know, but if it's equity rather than... Because what it is actually a racist piece of legislation to go through without even having the opportunities for local councils, and the coalition as government has gone out in support of councils having the ability to have... to maintain their own decisions, for example, with the three waters. But yet we don't have an opportunity in the bill as we've seen it to keep the status quo, which was part of local decision-making, that we did that as governance to establish Māori boards. So it's rescind, and go to a binding poll.
If you're looking for consistency, the consistency is that the issues that they found that they could use to get voted in, and that's where like a lot of David Seymour's electoral power base is. So that's the first motivation behind it. I know that there are people, we use the word democracy, there will be people saying, well, isn't it democratic to have a vote whether amongst all the people whether we have Māori wards or not?
Then we should have a vote on every ward. We should have votes on rural wards. We should have votes on whether we should have urban wards. We should have votes of whether to disestablish community boards or keep community boards. So no other ward is subject to a binding poll. Is that right? Is that democratic? No, it's not.
Yes.
So, And I'm just reading actually about the rating valuations. We should have that by June.
Oh, okay, so that's what they're hoping. Although again, it's not in council control.
Yeah.
In which case, that would.
Updated rating values for Waikato District are now planned to be sent to property owners next month. So that's in June. Revaluations of every property in the district were due to be finalised in May. However, the Office of the Valuer General, the government body that oversees all rating valuations, has agreed that the quotable value should take more time to work on the district's updated rating valuations before they are set to be finalised and released to the district's property owners. So we should be getting that in early June.
Okay. All right. Another thing where the council appears to be opposing the government is funding for Te Hui, the train.
I don't
know much about that. I just saw that there's a statement from Waikato District Council opposing their plans for that.
Yep. So the train services could be discontinued unless, of course, it continues to get funding provided by Waka Kotahi. And so we're opposed to that because there's real value in having a train service that runs through our district. And if we disestablish that, and in the future we're looking at re-establishing it, it's going to cost even more.
So what is Te Huia exactly?
Te Huia is the train that connects between Hamilton and Hamilton. Oh, Hamilton and Auckland.
Hamilton and Hamilton.
Hamilton and Hamilton. Well, it does. It goes through the district. So it's from Hamilton.
Yeah.
It's a daily service. And it goes up to Auckland and to Britomart. And then it comes back through. So it stopping in the district. And so there's really real value in encouraging people to use the train service on a daily. And it gets people out of their cars. And you don't have to drive to Auckland.
Yeah, well, we don't need to explain why we're trying to get people out of cars.
Yeah.
Like, I think we all know the global warming, climate change issues there. Okay, so, all right, there's that. Now, civil defence management
issues. Oh, yes,
issues.
And
so
civil defence. So, actually, that reminds me, thank you. We will be bringing our community plan to the next community board meeting. Sorry, Dennis, if you're hearing this fresh. I needed to put that onto our next community board agenda for approval from the community board, and then we can officially go out into the community to celebrate that and get the group together who are going to have oversight on the management and rollout of that plan and implementing it and when anything happens. So that's really great to have that, to get that ticked off at our next community board meeting.
Okay. And then what will happen? We're ready.
We're ready. We're ready for whatever may come. So,
except for our generator problem that we have here at the radio station, where we don't do I hand up here, don't do the maintenance on the generator properly. The maintenance is run it every few months so that the fuel is fresh.
And that can be something, as we've talked about before, that can sit under the umbrella of that community plan. But we just need manpower and people to commit to undertaking that work with the generators. Because it's not just the radio station, yeah. There's also the regular medical. We've also got a generator for the community board for our community response plan.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure there are others dotted around the place that needs regular upkeep or just regularly to be turned on.
Yeah, yeah. Because what happens, folks, is the fuel goes off, it turns into a yellow sticky syrup.
Oh, is that right?
And the generator won't start. And then you have to take it to Adam at the small motors place by Raglan Engineering.
So is it best to keep them empty of fuel then?
Yeah, he did actually show me a thing. For the particular machine we've got, it's got a little thing where you can let you open it up and then you start the engine and then the carburetor will run out of fuel because it's the fuel sitting in the carburetor. Are we doing a mechanics lesson now? I'm not the person for that. But there is
can
a way
of doing
that.
Can you see me looking at you blankly going?
Yeah, yeah. But Adam showed me the way to do it. But realistically, you do want to be starting every few months to make sure it works.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, for motors. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So anyway, that's the thing. We're a little under-resourced here at Community Radio.
I think that's why we need to have some sort of coordinated, a coordinated effort across the community where we can use each other's resources and person power when it comes to issues like this or maintenance. We really need to think strategically about that. So it's not just one organisation, but many.
I think the campground has a lot of generators as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to sustainability and wellbeing, is that the right way around? Committee, which you're the chair of for the council.
Sustainability and wellbeing.
The housing strategy, you guys have been doing some work on that. Have you produced a housing strategy?
We have. We've actually just finalised and signed off our housing strategy. So that's a piece of work that we really, under one of our staff, Vishal, and his team have put together a housing strategy, and we did engage with the community last year around what that might look like. Some of it is very out of the control of council, but you know, we all know that housing, without housing in our communities that provide for our whānau, for our communities, we have, you know, it's a basic human right for people to have access to housing, whether you own your own home, whether it's having the ability to have long-term tenancy, where it's healthy and dry, and where you can house your whānau, and we know that there is a real challenge out there. So we task staff with coming up with what could we do in council. So this is how we can enable and use the levers that we have to enable providers or out in the community those opportunities to support or encourage and enable housing across the district. And it's a complicated beast, and there's no one size fits all, but I'm really pleased that we've got our strategy. And so our vision for housing is that everyone in our community has access to a home that is safe, healthy and affordable. And it's part of a prospering, resilient and connected community. So I just really encourage everyone to go in and have a look at that housing strategy. So it has our principles focuses on homes, not houses. It's inclusive and equitable. It's affordable, future focused, and it integrates our communities. So there's a lot of things. So we can deliver parts of these through our district plan, through our consenting, through our long-term planning, through our policies and through our partnerships, whether it's with our hapū or it's partnerships with other organisations like MSD or the DIA. And we've also got a housing strategy action plans that sits under there. So I'm really proud of that piece of work that we've done. And now it's how do we do it?
Well, yeah, that was kind of the bigger question. Yeah, and that's a big question.
It's a big question, but we've got that, and, you know, we've enabled staff to enact it. So now it's looking at those mechanisms of how we can support that.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind for me is that if council owns any bits of land where houses could be built, and I know they used to in the early 2000s, there were a couple of bits of land that were sold off, which was the ideology of the time. That's all I know.
Yeah, so those are all the things that we need to consider throughout our district, what that might look like.
Councils used to build houses, rentals, for people, but was that with government support?
I don't know. Is that where those came from? I would be making that up if I answered that. So yeah. I would imagine that would have been, with government support with, and I don't like this term, social housing. You know.
Yeah, why do we call it that? It's just all houses have social purposes, don't they?
I know, but I think there's a connotation with social housing that, so it should be called community housing.
Oh, it's just a negative connotation because poor people live there or something. Okay, so it's just that usual nonsense. All right, well, we'll ignore that. I don't know where to go from. I'd like to see something happen, but I also very much understand that this is a problem for the government needs to provide some direction on and actually do
some
action.
And we need, with council, like I said, we can use the mechanisms that I mentioned before. How can we enable that development for housing for community? So that's what, and it's complicated and it takes resourcing, whether it's through staff time and it's through relationship building, and then you need to have funding to enable that as well. So it's a big picture. with even here in Raglan, with the Whangaroa Raglan Affordability Project, we wanted to enable some sort of community housing development, but it's really complicated to actually get that over the line. Mm. And I hope that we will be able to do something in the future that provides more for community housing.
Yeah. Now, your former colleague, Deputy Mayor Axel Beck, from the last three-year period of council, he's working on this problem at the moment, isn't he?
He was actually the CEO of the Waikato Regional Housing Initiative. So he headed that for a year. So he's no longer in that role, but he is still very much advocating for councils and other agencies around providing opportunities for housing. Affordable housing. He actually came in and submitted to the annual plan, and he didn't realise that we had actually adopted our housing strategy. So he had come in to really advocate for
hurried up.
And we and because he was disappointed that he couldn't see in our annual plan resourcing to housing. And provision of housing in some way, shape or form. So I was able to tell him that we've just recently adopted our housing strategy. Even though we hadn't put a line item in terms of an actual affordable housing line item to fund it, we've put staff time and energy into that, and staff have committed to the continuation of our housing strategy.
Okay, so if the pressure continues on the council's rating base and rate take, as we've talked about earlier this morning, that could be one of the things that goes off the list of things that council do, because we have to get back to core business.
Core business is housing, though, because without, in a roundabout way, and what we do is we allocate our staff time. And our staff have made a commitment to work on the housing strategy and do whatever they can in order to support initiatives.
Okay, so there's going to be some ideas coming forth from staff or from...
Well, what I suggest you do is look at the Housing Action Plan.
Okay, there's an action plan, cool.
Yeah, there's a Housing Action Plan that sits in the strategy.
You've probably said that before and my brain glossed over it. Yeah, okay, cool. There's something I saw in the... minutes for the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee was, first of all, there's a discretionary fund for that committee. I didn't realise.
Yeah, there is a discretionary.
What's your yearly budget?
That's a really good question.
Is it similar to the community board, which is like $14,000? That's how much money they have to spend each year.
There's more than that.
More than that to spend.
For the district-wide. Yeah, I need to go in there. I can actually tell you. I'll go in and have a look.
Okay, and I noticed that in Tuakau, they are creating a mental health hub up there.
They are, and that's a really...
which is not a council thing, it's just what the community's doing up there, but I was interested in that.
It is really cool because it has been pulled together by a number of the agencies in the community. So it's pretty much like we do here, you know, when we had the Community Wellbeing Connector, who pulled together resources through the different... organisations to support them, for example, Raglan Medical, suicide prevention, all of that sort of stuff. So up in Tuakau, they're very passionate. So along a similar line, they're addressing their community needs in that space. So for the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee, we have... it's really the committee that's geared for the softer stuff, I suppose, the human side of community development. So we have the blueprints that report to the sustainability and wellbeing, so we can see the progression of projects across the district that have a blueprint plan. And then we've also got our community-led development team that sits under that. So working with communities... to support them to realise, like the Tuakau community, and offer resourcing to enable them to create those plans and opportunities. So it's really awesome when we can see that communities are being empowered to make those, you know, create those opportunities themselves, and we're there as supporting actors, so to speak, to get...
Yeah, it certainly does need to come from the a passion within the community to make things like that happen.
Yeah, and our staff, so our staff time, but also our staff's ability to connect with other agencies, support them with the funding applications, and of course if they come to the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee, accessing funds if they're not in... an area where they can access funding, for example, community board discretionary funds, for example, because we've got communities in the rural areas and that don't sit in a ward that has a discretionary fund, for example.
Okay. All right.
So I'm just bringing up how much we've got.
Are you? I will, I'll pad for time, shall I?
Yeah.
I was going to ask about the draft transport strategy for Raglan.
We've got our workshop happening in July, so I haven't seen the update of that, so we're having a workshop on it, so I can't give you any more information.
Okay.
On it,
something that John Lawson has brought to me, which he's been submitting to the Future Proof strategy that the Waikato region itself is doing and all the councils are getting together on, and of course, the big focus on that is the State Highway 1 corridor, as you'll know, being on the council. But he asked the question, is there been a corridor study done on State Highway 23? And it was a really good question, because all the projections for our local population are to quadruple at most, or double, or something within so many decades. And trying to imagine State Highway 23 with twice as much traffic on it, it's actually not a pretty thing. There's very few passing lanes. No one has a plan for that, but we're building lots of houses. You know, we've got another 1,000 houses due to be built in the next, I don't know, decade or two. We know that they're coming already. We've seen the plans. So, I don't know, I just mentioned that because John brought that up, and I was like, yeah, that's actually a really good point.
Yeah, that is a really good point. I'm not over that, so
no, I know you won't be. Yeah,
but you know. I was thinking the other day,
it's not a council road, we should say.
But, you know, we saw the impact of when State Highway 23 was closed. And then it's about the maintenance of those other feeder roads, whether it's through Waitatuna or if it were through Waingaro or if it were through Te Hutuwai Road. You know, if things were to happen, those... feeder roads are even more important in terms of building those community resilience pathways. And so I have been thinking about that. And then now that you've mentioned State Highway 23, building in that future resilience planning,
It's still the main artery.
Yeah,
isn't
it is the main artery. And so giving thought and to that more is something that I have to think about.
All right. Folks, we're talking to our councillor, Lisa Thompson. Lisa, is there anything else council-wise that you want to bring us at the moment? You're still looking up that number.
I know, I'm still looking up that number for you for the discussion.
It's hard to look up numbers and answer my questions at the same time. And I can't allow silence. Silence is not allowed.
I know, silence
on
the radio. The radio.
No.
So we've got, on Monday, we've got our Waikato River Corridor with Waikato Tainui on Monday. And then we've got workshops next week as well, so I can update you on that. And then on Wednesday, we've got our Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee workshop. And we've also got a workshop on light motor vehicle prohibitions and traffic workshop. So have you
What's a light motor vehicle? Is that like a scooter?
I'm not sure. So
that's a very light motor vehicle.
Very light motor vehicle. And so it's just the normal council business as we move forward. But we've also got next weekend the RAFA Awards, the Film Awards for the Film Festival. So that's exciting. So that's a council role. So I'll be emceeing that.
Oh, you're going to emcee it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It'll be my third time, actually.
Really? I haven't been to that for a few years. Maybe I should go along just to see how good an emcee you are.
Get
you a slot on the radio.
I did say to Jacqueline, maybe they might have been a bit desperate.
No, I'm sure. The previous mayor was very complimentary about your public speaking skills, so... I'm sure you've got them. So is that's everything? You're looking at a list?
I'm looking at the list because there's always something that's happening, and if I don't look at my diary, I don't know what's happening from day to day.
Yeah.
So that's that.
That's that. All right, Lisa, thank you for coming in.